Hey everyone, welcome to the next part in our series on the history of Sha'alot u'Tshuvot of Responsa in America. Today we're going to deal with one of the first, if not the first, case of a psak halacha of a rabbinic ruling originating in America that was given credence and which was further discussed among the leading rabbis of Europe. The psak. The ruling was given by Rabbi Bernard Illoui. We'll talk about him a little bit in a minute or so. It was given by Rabbi Bernard Illoui, who at the time was serving as a rabbi in New Orleans. And there's a wonderful, wonderful article, which much of the shir is based on. The wonderful article on this whole episode written by Dr. Professor David Ellenson, which is available online. You're free to Google it and to find it. And we'll be referencing that article at different times throughout the shir. So who was Rabbi Bernard Illoui, who was the originator of this psak, who gave this psak, which caused such an uproar and such a controversy? So a little background on Rabbi Illoui. Rabbi Illoui was born in Bohemia, which is what we now call the Czech Republic, in either 1812 or 1814. They're differing dates, not 100% clear. He studied at the Pressburg Yeshiva, the famous Yeshiva of Pressburg, and he received smicha from none other than the Chassam Sofer. However, Rabbi Illoui had a difficult time obtaining a rabbinic position in Europe due to his political views. So what do we mean by that? Rabbi Illoui got caught up in the revolutions and the political turmoil, particularly in 1848, which was a time and a year, a specific year, of particular political upheaval throughout Europe, and Rabbi Illoui got caught up in much of that upheaval. And so, due to this difficulty in obtaining a position, he was forced to emigrate to the United States. In America, Illoui was somewhat of a wandering rabbi. He never really stayed in one place for more than a few years. He served congregations in New York, in St. Louis, Baltimore, New Orleans, and Cincinnati, amongst others. He was known as an ardent opponent of the Reform movement in America, and you read some of the literature which he put out. He used both his pulpit and the press to support orthodoxy against the Reform movement in America. Illoui's last position was in Cincinnati, where he tragically died in a farm accident in 1871, so he died at a relatively young age, and he's buried in Cincinnati. Many of Illoui's writings were collected after his death by his son, and they were compiled into a book titled Milchamot Elokim, which is available on HebrewBooks.org. It's a fascinating read. Full of responsa, full of other articles that he wrote, various forms of literature, both in Hebrew and English. I think there might be some German there as well, but it's available on HebrewBooks.org. So I would recommend if one can to go and take a look. Okay, so let's get to the case at hand. The case we're dealing with in this lecture took place during Rabbi Illoui's time in New Orleans. As an aside, Illoui was a rabbi in New Orleans for much of the Civil War, which was obviously a very tumultuous time in that southern city. And we'll begin with the original Psak Halacha, which was offered by Illoui. It was published in the Jewish Messenger, which was a Jewish newspaper published out of New York at the time. So what are the circumstances of the case and of Rabbi Illoui's ruling? It seems that it had based primarily on Illoui's writings itself. It had become common practice in New Orleans for mohalim to perform circumcisions not only on halachically Jewish children, but they would perform circumcisions. They would give a bris also to children born of Jewish fathers and non-Jewish mothers. So just as an aside, we often think of intermarriage as a 20th century or 21st century issue in the American Jewish community. This is not correct at all. Unfortunately, intermarriage was a common challenge throughout American history. Obviously, you know, different times, there were different rates of intermarriage and the like. But this was an issue. This was an issue that was dealt with, and that the community was challenged by at different times throughout American Jewish history. So again, the practice of some of the Mohalim in New Orleans was again to circumcise not only Jewish, halachically Jewish children, but also children born of Jewish fathers and of non-Jewish mothers, who of course are not halachically Jewish. So Rabbi Ilui, who's the rabbi of the Orthodox community, or one of the Orthodox rabbis at the time in New Orleans, he published his opinion. Again, it was published in the Jewish Messenger, one of the Jewish newspapers at the time. Again, as another aside, parenthetically, much of the, at this time in American Jewish history, much of the back and forth on even halachic issues was published not in formal tshuvos, not necessarily in formal responsa, but actually was published in various forms of the Jewish press, not the Jewish press, but the Jewish press, Jewish newspapers at the time. So he publishes this his opinion, stating that the performance of such circumcisions was forbidden according to halacha and in his view, and that the Mo'alim of New Orleans should cease performing such circumcisions. So, what happens? The article in the Jewish Messenger records the reasons Ilui thought that this was forbidden. So why was this forbidden? You might think at first glance, of course this is forbidden, but Rabbi Ilui justifies and defends and proves his opinion. So he says, number one, that the mila, right, the circumcision, was not done l'shem geirus. It was not done for the sake of circumcision. For the sake of conversion. Sorry. And in almost every case that such a circumcision was performed, there was no tevila, there was no immersion in a mikveh afterwards to complete the conversion. That's number one. Number two, the second reason which Rabbi Ilui outlines, he says, since the mila was not being performed l'shem geirus, since it was not being performed for the sake of conversion, therefore the Mohel was reciting a bracha levatala on the circumcision. When he recited the bracha of Asher Kiddushanu b'mitzvot Savet Sivanu al Hamila, since it was not being done, A, on a Jewish child or on a non-Jewish child, but l'shem geirus for the sake of conversion, so therefore that's considered a bracha levatala, that was taking God's name in vain. And then the third and the final reason given by Rabbi Ilui was that even had the circumcision been done l'shem geirus, and even if there had been a tevila, even if there had been immersion in a mikvah afterwards, what hope was there of such a child growing up to observe the mitzvahs if they have a Christian mother and a non-observant father, right? So the whole conversion, so to speak, if it was done for the sake of conversion, it was a faulty conversion, given that the child had no real hope of being raised as an observant Jew. So those are the main three reasons which Rabbi Ilui outlines in his article in the Messenger, in the Jewish Messenger, outlawing and forbidding these Mo'alim from performing these circumcisions. Furthermore, Ilui was concerned, okay, so he had, those were the three main halachic considerations, but furthermore, Ilui was concerned that with a circumcision, these boys would grow up and mistakenly be considered Jews, and therefore in the future they would be allowed to marry Jewish women. The community would think, these boys were circumcised, 8 days old, and therefore they're Jewish, but in fact they weren't, and so Rabbi Ilui was concerned that this would bring about further intermarriage in the future, people mistakenly identifying them as Jews. So these were the reasons offered by Rabbi Ilui. Okay. Rabbi Ilui presented his reasoning and his decision to his congregation. And lo and behold, right, you might be maybe surprised by this, but not everyone followed him, right? Not everyone listened to the rabbi. Okay, history does indeed repeat itself. Two of the three Mohalim, interesting that there were three, Mohalim in this small congregation in New Orleans in the 1860s. But in any case, two of the three Mohalim in his congregation accepted his decision. And they said, okay, if this is what the rabbi paskened, if this is what he ruled, we're going to stop performing such circumcision. However, the third Mohel in the congregation did not accept Rabbi Illui's ruling. And as is reported in the Jewish Messenger, the third Mohel declared that he would continue to circumcise children born of non-Jewish mothers. As a result of this, Rabbi Illui publicly declared that this Mohel was to be considered pasul. He was disqualified from performing any circumcisions in New Orleans. So as a result of the of this Mohel acting so obstinately, Rabbi Illui decided that this Mohel is no longer fit for any sort of circumcision, even on a 100% Jewish child. Interestingly, staying in America for the moment, but interestingly, this issue in New Orleans gained the reaction of another important religious leader in America at the time by the name of Isaac Leeser. You may have heard of Isaac Leeser. Isaac Leeser was not a rabbi per se. For many years, he was the chazan at Congregation Mikveh Israel in Philadelphia, one of the historic Sephardic congregations. Traditional Orthodox congregations in America. In general, he's considered to have been a strong defender of traditional Judaism in America in the 19th century. Again, he wasn't a rabbi. He didn't have formal rabbinic training. He didn't have extensive rabbinic training. However, he was kind of, in a way, in many ways, I don't mean this in a bad way, but what was available at the time in terms of rabbinic or traditional leadership, in the absence of a cadre of real rabbis, Rabbi Leeser was very often considered a spokesman, if you will, for rabbinic or for traditional, Judaism in America. So anyway, so he weighs in on this issue. And as Ellenson in his article reports, that Leeser did not agree with Illui's psak, and he felt that there were ways for the Mohel, this third Mohel, to continue to circumcise such children, and that Illui, Rabbi Illui, was wrong for declaring this Mohel pasul or unfit. So all of that is what takes place on this side of the ocean here in America, in the United States. So how does this issue make it to Europe? Rabbi Illui sent a letter to a leading Orthodox periodical in Germany called the Israelite with the purpose of gaining the opinions of Orthodox leaders in Europe. So, and this is a phenomenon that was not uncommon where American rabbis would kind of ask for, seek out some sort of approbation, some sort of agreement, if you will, support for their opinions, not just American rabbis. This is common in the rabbinic world as well. But we find this in the history of the American rabbinate. So Rabbi Illui sent a letter to a leading Orthodox periodical in Germany, the Israelite, to gain with his opinion, right, with his psak halacha, deeming that what the Mohalim were doing was usur, was prohibited, and deeming that the third Mohel was unfit and that he should be considered pasul. And he wanted to get the support and the opinions of Orthodox leaders in Europe. So a number of responses were offered to Rabbi Illui's letter, including that of Rabbi Dr. Lehman, who was the editor of the Israelite. He also offered his opinion. However, and this is where things get really interesting, however, the primary responses were those of Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer, okay, none other than the leading posek of German Jewry at the time, Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer, as well as Rabbi Zvi Hirsch Kalischer. We'll talk about Rabbi Zvi Hirsch Kalischer soon. We'll give more background on him, but he was also a leading rabbi at the time. And so these were the two main responses that that were published in the Israelite, again, this periodical in Germany. It's a fascinating, somewhat lengthy correspondence between the two of them, between Rabbi Hildesheimer and Rabbi Kalischer. So we'll summarize their main points of contention. But first, a little background on the figures we are we're discussing. So Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer, probably more well-known, or at least the name is well-known, was the founder and head of the rabbinical seminary in Berlin. He was a leading posek in Germany, as well as a leading polemicist against the Reform movement. And the same Rabbi Ellenson, Dr. Ellenson, that I was quoting, whose article is about this episode, I believe his doctorate and then subsequently published book was actually about Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer. So Ayin Sham, if you want to know more about him, you can take a look there. Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, on the other hand, is most well known for his work Drishat Zion, which essentially called for the settling of the land of Israel. He is considered one of the chief quote unquote proto-Zionists, meaning those that propagated the idea of settling the land of Israel before the formal advent of the Zionist movement by Herzl. So Kalischer, amongst a few others, was calling already for a return and a settlement of the land of Israel prior to the modern Zionist movement in the late 19th century. But although Kalischer is most well known for this, he was actually a leading rabbi in Prussia in a city called Thorn or Torin, which is now part of Poland. So getting to our case. Rabbi Kalischer maintained that circumcising the sons of Gentile mothers in New Orleans was, get this, was not only a sin, but it was actually a mitzvah. Okay, so again, I'll repeat that Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer felt that the circumcising of these children in New Orleans who were born to non-Jewish mothers, so they were halachically not Jewish, these boys, he felt that it was a mitzvah, actually, to give them a bris milah, to circumcise them. How so? Where does that come from, right? Sounds maybe quite strange to us. Firstly, Rabbi Kalischer, based on the Rambam, okay, so he based his opinion on the Rambam, he held that even if a non-Jew wants to be circumcised, we are to perform the circumcision. That there's no isser, there's no prohibition against circumcising a non-Jew as it is, even if they plan on remaining non-Jewish. Secondly, says Rabbi Kalischer, that if these boys wish to convert later in life, this would make it much easier for them, already having gone through the circumcision procedure. And thirdly, and perhaps most importantly, Kalischer argued that since these boys have Jewish fathers, they are considered what he called Zera Kodesh, a holy seed. Meaning, halachically, they may not be considered Jewish. However, it's not that they have no connection, if you will, to Judaism or to the Jewish people. Therefore, argued Rabbi Kalischer, is a mitzvah to circumcise them when they are babies so as not to reject them and push them away from the community of Israel. Dr. Ellenson correctly points out that Kalischer was giving the fathers of these children quite a large benefit of the doubt and judging them very favorably, even arguing that their desire to circumcise their sons was an act of tshuva on their part. Okay, so that's an important point, which I believe Dr. Ellenson makes, in that not that the fathers were completely disconnected and wanted to remain disconnected from the Jewish people, but despite having married non-Jewish women, they wanted to maintain some sort of connection to the Jewish people and to Judaism, and so they came forth with this desire to circumcise their children. And maybe that's also why Rabbi Kalischer considered them Zera Kodesh, right? That there was something still holy about them, despite the circumstances of their birth to a non-Jewish mother. So those are Rabbi Kalischer's main arguments. So what was Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer's response? First, Rabbi Hildesheimer argued that we are not in the business of encouraging conversion. We don't proselytize in Judaism. We don't try to convince people to convert. Sometimes we even do the opposite, right? We try to discourage people from converting. And Rabbi Hildesheimer argued that conversion must be done willingly, and also must be done with the intention of keeping the mitzvos, which was clearly in his eyes, and to most, right? Pretty clear it was not the case in the situation in New Orleans, as Rabbi Illoui explained. They have non-Jewish mothers, these boys. They have completely non-observant fathers. And so, like Rabbi Illoui himself argued, what are the chances that these kids are going to grow up to be observant Jews, committed Jews at all? And so, therefore, their conversion would be basically meaningless, according to Rabbi Hildesheimer. Related to this, Hildesheimer contended with Rabbi Kalischer's assertion that these boys were to be considered Zera Kodesh. He says they're not Jewish. They have non-Jewish mothers. They have non-observant fathers. There's almost no way that they will grow up to be God-fearing Jews, to be observant Jews. Therefore, sounds a little harsh to us, but again, looking at the circumstances, Rabbi Hildesheimer says they're not considered Zera Kodesh, holy offspring. If, in fact, they were as... if, in fact, the circumcision was some sort of act of tshuva on the part of the fathers, okay, so maybe, but that's clearly not how Rabbi Zviel Hildesheimer viewed the situation. Rabbi Hildesheimer agreed with Rabbi Bernard Illoui's concern that these boys will grow up and mistakenly be thought of as Jews and will be allowed to marry Jewish women. The correspondence between these two rabbis, between Rabbi Hildesheimer and Rav Kalischer, continued, with each of them writing a subsequent letter and defending the already stated positions. Again, if you look in the Tshuvos of Rav Azriel Hildesheimer, this is all published there. Rav Kalischer suggested that the matter be sent to other leading rabbis, either in Germany or in Eastern Europe, to solicit their opinions, but there doesn't seem to be any record of that, so it seems like that never took place. So that was the case. That was the original psak of Rabbi Illoui. That was the correspondence that then took place in Europe by some of the leading rabbis of Europe in response to Rabbi Illoui's original ruling. And just to conclude, the tshuvos we discussed are significant really for a number of reasons. First of all, they give us insight into controversies and challenges that the American Jewish community faced at that point in time, namely in the middle of the 19th century, right, in the 1860s. And they give us particular insight into the thought of Rabbi Bernard Illoui, one of the only available poskim and ordained rabbis in the United States at the time. And perhaps most significant from a historical point of view, in terms of what we're trying to see, what we're trying to develop in this series, is that Rabbi Illoui's psak is perhaps the first tshuva, really the first tshuva from an American rabbi which gained traction in Europe, and the fact that these two leading rabbis, Rabbi Zriel Hildesheimer and Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, took the time to discuss and to argue and to analyze Rabbi Illoui's psak, his ruling, it really shows us that this is one of, if not the first tshuva from an American rabbi to gain the respect of leading rabbis in the old world in Europe. Thank you very, very much for listening.